1 Corinthians chapter 3, I want to begin reading at verse 9. For we are laborers together with God. Ye are God's husbandry. Ye are God's building, according to the grace of God, which is given unto me as a wise master builder. I have laid the foundation, and another buildeth thereon. But let every man take heed how he buildeth thereon. Now, if any man build upon this foundation gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, stubble, every man's work shall be made manifest, for the day shall declare it, because it shall be revealed by fire, and the fire shall try every man's work of what sort it is. If any man's work abide, which he hath built thereupon, he shall receive a reward. If any man's work shall be burned, he shall suffer loss, but he himself shall be saved, yet so as by fire. Know ye not that ye are the temple of God, and that the Spirit of God dwelleth in you? If any man defile the temple of God, him shall God destroy. For the temple of God is holy, which temple ye are. Let no man deceive himself. If any man among you seemeth to be wise in this world, let him become a fool, that he may be wise. For the wisdom of this world is foolishness with God. For it is written, He taketh the wise in their own craftiness. And again, the Lord knoweth the thoughts of the wise, that they are vain. Therefore, let no man glory in men, for all things are yours, whether Paul, or Apollos, or Cephas, or the world, or life, or death, or things present, or things to come, all are yours, and ye are Christ's, and Christ is God's. It was in the summer of 1982, a friend of mine and I were sent to Enid, Oklahoma to work in construction. We worked for a contractor, and we were told that we were going to build an underground house. Now, back then, underground houses were cutting edge. It was something to be able to do this. And our contractor told us, you'll only be there a month, and you'll have this house completely built, 1 month. That was in September, and at Christmas time, December of that year, we were still in Enid, Oklahoma, and the house wasn't built yet. Now, there were reasons why. Let me give you one, or a couple. It was important because it was important to have a good foundation on that house, for that house, because the walls of that house, three of the walls were going to be concrete because they were going to hold back the dirt. So the foundation had to be pretty solid. Now, I don't know how many of you have ever been to Oklahoma, but the dirt in Oklahoma is not sandy soil. It's clay. And when it rains and then the sun comes out, the clay is wet and then dried, and it becomes like slimy concrete. We hired a backhoe to come dig the footings. The guy came one day. He didn't get halfway done with the trenching that he was supposed to do. The next day, we waited for him. He loaded up his backhoe, which should have told us, you know, there's going to be a problem. He loaded his backhoe up on the trailer and took off and said, well, I'll see you in the morning. 7 o'clock in the morning came, he wasn't there. 8 o'clock, he wasn't there. 9 o'clock, he still wasn't there. 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock. Finally, my friend Rick gets hold of the guy. Oh, I'm not coming back. Well, why not? Well, I broke a tooth on my backhoe. Okay, but why didn't you call us and tell us that? Well, you know, I just figured you'd figure it out that I'm not coming back. So those footings had to be dug. So Gary and Rick took pickaxes and shovels, and for the next week, we were digging those footings. When the cement trucks showed up, I'll never forget this. When the cement trucks showed up, now this house is out in the middle of a cow pasture. And there are cow pastures with hills all over them. And there's a long drive. Remember what the dirt is like in Oklahoma. When it rains, it turns into a slimy mess. And these concrete trucks, about seven of them, show up. And they have to drive up and down these hills. One of them actually made it. There were like five or six of these concrete trucks. The second one, it was raining so hard, we had to take the tractor down. Rick took the tractor down to pull the thing up the hill. We couldn't get any more trucks up. That was another two or three day delay. So it was just one thing after another like that. But I'll never forget how important those footings had to be for that house. The foundation of a house is vitally important to establish. And Paul, interestingly here, uses this analogy of a foundation for the ministry that he has started in Corinth. How firm a foundation. I want you to notice some things that Paul says about this in 1 Corinthians chapter 3 this morning. I'll get it. Okay, why isn't it? This isn't working. Here we go. How firm a foundation. In verse 9, Paul says, "For we are laborers together with God. Ye are God's husbandry, ye are God's building." I want you to notice something about this. Paul says that he and Apollos are laborers together with God. And then he uses a couple of illustrations. The first one he uses is, ye are God's husbandry. That's an interesting term. The word literally means ye are God's cultivated field. Why is that important? Because of what he has said prior to that. And we talked about this last week. Remember what Paul's role was in this church? He was the one who planted. Apollos was the one who came along and watered. But God is the one who gave the increase. And now he's going to get into this even more, and in verse 9, he says, ye are God's building. That word building is literally a house. A house. You are, he's telling the Corinthian believers, as a church, you are God's dwelling place. God dwells within you. God resides there with you. You think this is important? Look at verse 10. Why is this so important? In verse 10, he says something interesting too. He tells us how he got this role, as a planter. Notice what he says, "According to the grace of God, which is given unto me as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation." I want us to notice this, that this isn't something that Paul's ideas didn't come to him just off the top of his head. This wasn't some human invention that he's concocted, that he's devised. Paul says that God gave him this by grace, by the grace of God, he says, which was given unto me as a wise master builder, as a wise master builder. I've been looking at this for a couple of weeks. I'm fascinated with this word because it's the word architectone. Does that look familiar at all to anyone? It's the word architect. But there's something very important about this. An architect today in our minds is someone who goes into an office and uses computers now, but back in my day, we actually had rules and we had slides and we would draw lines on paper and we would make up plans for houses. Remember that underground house we built? It did have plans. The funny thing about that, I remember one time they came, semi-trucks came with the roof panels for the house. And the house was laid out where it was about 35 feet wide, and the roof panels were about 15 feet wide apiece, and they would sit on the outside walls, and then there was a middle wall that ran down the interior of it. And they would sit on those, they would sit on the interior wall and on the outside walls. Well, they had an offset because the guy wanted a skylight in his roof. So they allowed for that, and they had to cut these panels, or they had to build these panels out. I don't know who it was. It wasn't me. But when they came down to measure it, they didn't measure it right. And half the panels were wrong. These are pre-stressed panels that were shipped down out of Kansas into Oklahoma. They had all of them go back to Kansas, and they had to redo the panel. That took another week and a half. So you can see, this is why I'm down there at Christmas time when he told me I'll be home. You'll be home by October. Don't worry about it. No, it wasn't. It's important to follow the plans that are drawn, that are designed, right? Paul is saying, I was an architectone, not in the sense of someone who just had these theories and ideas about what needed to be done in God's work. That translation that we have in here is an excellent, excellent way to express this word, as a wise master builder. A master builder is someone who gets his hands on the work. And when problems come up, he knows exactly how to fix the problem. He knows exactly what to do, not by theory, but by experience. So Paul is saying, as a wise master builder, that I got this by the grace of God. He says, I have laid the foundation. I have laid the foundation, and another buildeth thereon. But let every man take heed how he buildeth that phrase. Let every man take heed how he buildeth thereon. Pay attention to what you do in the ministry. Pay attention to how the ministry is being done. See, we live in a day, in a society, in a culture that people don't care. People don't think about what is important in ministry. People just, I want to go do something. I have this idea, and I'm just going to go influence people. And people follow them. I cannot tell you. Matt and I talk about this a lot. There are all kinds of weird ideas out there about what the church is supposed to be doing. That's why I'm so excited about the next few weeks when we're going to be talking about it. Because I'll tell you, there are so many people today who believe that we need to be kingdom building today. We need to be establishing the kingdom. We need to be bringing in the kingdom. That's nonsense. And really, it's demeaning and degrading to what God is doing in this dispensation. I think it is the most wonderful thing to be the part of the body of Christ. You know, think about this. We talk a lot about the coming kingdom, how wonderful the coming kingdom will be. But do you know why we believe that the kingdom will be a wonderful time? Because we, as the bride of Christ, will be seated on the throne with Christ in that kingdom, ruling and reigning with him in that kingdom, which is something we're not doing now. We're not ruling and reigning. And he's gonna talk about that later in chapter 4. But anyway, He says, as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation, and let another man take heed how he buildeth thereon. For other foundation, verse 11, for other foundation can no man lay than that which is laid. Now look at verse 12. Now if any man build upon this foundation, you get the idea that a foundation is pretty important to a structure. that a foundation is pretty foundational, pun intended. You know why a foundation is important? Because a foundation distributes the weight of the structure over a large area so that it avoids overloading the soil. Remember in Matthew chapter 7, Jesus gives this analogy, Jesus gives this picture about a wise man and a foolish man. And the foolish man builds his house on sand. And the foolish man probably thinks, it's going to be fine. Everything's going to work perfectly. The doors are going to open. The windows are going to open. Everything's going to be fine. But when that house starts sinking a little bit, when the storms of life come along, and that house starts tilting and tipping, the doors aren't going to open anymore. And the windows aren't going to open. And the house on the sand, as the song says, fell flat. But the man who builds his house on a rock, when the storms of life come, you see, the foundation is important because you don't want something tilting and tipping. You want something level and secure. So he says, as a wise master builder, I established this foundation. And notice in verse 11 what that foundation is. For other foundation can no man lay than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ. That's fascinating to me because over in 2 Corinthians, he talks about teachers who come into the church and they're teaching another Jesus. And they're preaching another gospel. In other words, they're laying a different foundation. Paul says, there is no other foundation that can be laid than that which is laid. And that foundation is Jesus Christ. That foundation, and if you want to go back into chapter 1 and read how important Jesus Christ is as the foundation, look at verse 17 of chapter 1. Again with me. Christ sent me not to baptize, but to preach the gospel. The gospel is foundational. The gospel is essential to anything, any kind of ministry anybody does, or what Paul is saying. And he says in verse 12, now if any man build upon this foundation, Notice these building materials, gold, silver, precious stones. I don't think we have to talk about how wonderful gold is and how precious it is. And I don't think we even have to mention what's so important about silver. I was so excited the other day. I went out for a walk, and I was looking down in the street right in front of our house as I walked out the driveway with our dog. And there was a silver coin laying there right in front of my drive, a quarter. A couple of days later, I'm walking along, and I found two more quarters. I was so excited. And then I came to work, and I got my bubble burst. Pastor Matt found a dollar bill. My silver was prettier than his green, but hey, what do I know? Silver is valuable. But notice the words precious stones. That's not talking about jewels. That's talking about building material like marble, granite, quartz. And I'll tell you why here in a little bit. But notice this too. The other building material, wood, hay, and stubble. Now, often people will say, well, those things are worthless. Really? You know, wood's beautiful. There are certain kinds of woods that are just spectacular. Maple, oak, cherry. Hay is important. And stubble, too. But they're temporary. They're not as valuable And in verse 13, he goes on and says, every man's work shall be made manifest, for the day shall declare it, because it shall be revealed by fire, and the fire shall try every man's work of what sort it is. Every man's work of what sort it is. I want you to notice this and keep this in mind as we go through this. That little phrase at the very end of chapter 3, verse 13, every man's work of what sort it is. See that? That little word, sort, is very important to what we're going to be talking about now. In verse 14, he goes on and says, if any man's work abide, which he hath built thereon, on the foundation, he shall receive a reward. He's going to talk to us about three types of builders. The wise or the skilled builder. Remember, notice this in verse 14. He says, if any man's work abide. In other words, he's someone who's used gold, silver, precious stones. He's someone who's built ministry on what foundation I've laid, Jesus Christ. He's done it right. And it says, he shall receive a reward. Now, he doesn't talk about what the reward is, but over in chapter 4, he says in verse 5, judge nothing before the time until the Lord come, who shall both bring to light the hidden things of darkness and will make manifest the counsels of the heart. Now, notice this. Then shall every man have praise of God. See that? Praise of God. Every man shall have praise of God. That's a reward. To hear the words, well done, thou good and faithful servant, enter thou into the joy of thy rest. I am pleased with what you've done for me. I you have brought honor and glory to me. I'm always taken with the prayers of David and the prayers of Solomon and other people in the Old Testament and God's response to those prayers. When God speaks, God often will tell them how pleased he is with them, with what they've done. When Solomon built the temple, was God pleased with that? Tremendously. What about Moses? At times, you know, not all the time, but they often had the praise of God expressed to them for what they had done. Even David, even though David didn't get to build the temple, God was pleased that David wanted to build the temple. And God was pleased that David got all the material necessary for the temple to be built. So Solomon didn't have to do that. That's a wise man. But there's also an inept, inexperienced, or a novice. Notice what he says in verse 15. If any man's works shall be burned, he shall suffer loss. But he himself shall be saved, yet so as by fire. He's not talking about loss of salvation. I've got to make that clear. It's not talking about the possibility of someone losing their salvation. He's talking about losing out on rewards. In other words, probably doing something with the wrong motive. Like, I'm jealous of Matt being able to do something or Dave being able to do something, so I want to do something. That's not a legitimate reason for doing a work of ministry. A legitimate reason for doing a work of ministry is to honor and glorify God. I want God to receive the praise. I want God to receive the adulation. I want God to receive the honor. I don't care about myself. I'm nothing. God is everything. You see this over and over and over again in a lot of ministry. There are worthy motives and there are unworthy motives. gold, silver, and precious stone. He will suffer loss. And it's important. I want to bring this out too. It's important to know when someone does works of gold, silver, precious stone, wood, hay, stubble, you know, a lot of times we look at that and we can't tell the difference. We don't know. It's like remember the parable of the wheat and the tares? You can't tell the difference. So you don't pluck them up until the end of the age when Jesus comes. And then they'll be taken care of. So often we can't tell the difference. We can't distinguish between them. But at the day of judgment, notice what he says. At the day of judgment, everyone's work shall be tried of what sort it is, verse 13. Let the Lord sort it out. Let the Lord deal with it, not me. There's a third type of builder, though. The destructive, the hostile, the antagonist. This is why I believe ministry is so important, and the reason that both the methods and the material that are used are critical. Notice what he says in verse 16. Know ye not that ye are the temple of God? You see that? That word ye is plural. What he's talking about here is them collectively, not individually. He's going to talk about that later. He's going to talk about individually later on in chapters 5 and 6. But right now he's talking about the church as the body, the entire, the congregation. Know ye not that, notice this, ye are the temple of God. The temple, was the temple in the Old Testament, was the temple important? I mean, the temple was the life of Israel, right? And in the kingdom, the temple will be important again. You know, by the way, you know what the temple was in the Old Testament? Especially the Holy of Holies? It was the throne room of God. That was where God dwelt. That was where God ruled. That was, so it was a big deal. And Paul says, it's a big deal even now. Ye are the temple of God, that the Spirit of God dwelleth in you. And then verse 18, no, well, look at verse 16 again. That phrase, know ye not, do you know that's used 10 times in this letter? Know ye not. Know ye not? Know ye not? Do you not know? That phrase is used 10 times in this letter. And what he's saying is, this is a vitally serious matter. And you need to pay attention to this. See, what he's saying is, this is not some human institution or organization that is happening. This is the temple of God. This is what God is doing in this age. Why we should be excited about this. You know, God has set aside national Israel for a time, but he will restore that. He will restore them. But right now he's working with us in and through the church. And he gets into this wisdom in verse 18. Let no man deceive himself. If any man among you seemeth to be wise in this world, what's he said about worldly wisdom in chapter 1 and chapter 2? It's foolishness with God. But he says, if anyone seems wise in this world, let him become a fool, that he may be wise. Because the wisdom of the world is foolishness with God, and the foolishness of God is wiser than men. The wisdom of this world is foolishness, for it is written, and he quotes from Job and he quotes from the Psalms here, he taketh the wise in their own craftiness. You know, when people think they are so smart, God laughs. I often think when I read scientific matters, scientific articles about evolution. How can God just not laugh at that? What silliness that is. When I read articles about when I read articles about theological liberalism and how salvation is by works, we can work our way to heaven. We can pick ourselves up by our own bootstraps. We deserve heaven. No, we don't. That's foolish. He says, "The Lord knoweth the thoughts of the wise. They are vain." You ever think that? You ever think, boy, how can he not be aware of it? God knows everything. These people aren't getting away with anything. These politicians are not getting away with wasting money and passing laws that are ungodly and wicked. They're not getting away with it. Don't panic about it. Don't get upset about it. Don't fret about it. Don't worry about it. Let God take care of it, and he will. They're vain thoughts. And then verse 21, let no man glory in men. Don't boast in men. Don't exalt men. I mean, that's what he has said about himself, about Paul, about Cephas, about Apollos. We're God's workers. We're God's laborers. That's all we are. We're nothing. God is everything. For leaders, when evaluating, for us, he says, for leaders, when evaluating ministry, avoid the wisdom of this world. You know why the wisdom of this world is so bad? Because of Ephesians 2:2. Because it reflects the mind of Satan. It's devilish. And Paul says it's foolishness with God. When he talks about glorying in men whom they follow, regarding people higher than they deserve is dangerous for everyone. Because look at verse 31 of chapter 1. Notice this. If you want to boast in something or boast in someone, he that glorieth, let him glory in the Lord. Let him boast in God. I'm often struck with John chapter 3 when John the Baptist, was John the Baptist an important person in Israel, in national Israel? He was, the people liked him. Very much. John says this when Jesus comes on the scene. I'm just a friend of the bridegroom. He's the bridegroom. I'm his friend. He must increase. I must decrease. He must increase. I must decrease. I must decrease in importance. I must decrease in prominence. And you read that in the Gospels. When John comes on the scene, he's the one preaching the kingdom, preaching the kingdom, preaching the kingdom. And then when Jesus comes on the scene, where's John? He slowly fades away. Then he winds up in prison, and then he winds up executed. He must increase. We must decrease. The boasting should be in God. Why? Because as believers, we belong to God. Notice this in verse 23 of chapter 3. He says, ye are Christ, and Christ is God's. You belong to Christ. That's what he's going to tell us later as individuals when he says, you're not your own. You're bought with a price. What was the price? The blood of Christ. The work of Christ. The body that was given for us. The blood that was shed for us on our behalf. You belong to Christ now. And this church is Christ's church. not my church. It's not your church. It's the church of the living God, who is the pillar and ground of the truth. Because this is what he's doing today. I love being up, and I hope you do too. I get so excited about the opportunities we have to be together, especially in corporate worship. I look forward to it. In 1 Corinthians, and I'll close with this, 1 Corinthians 15:58, Paul admonishes us and the Corinthians, "Therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, for as much as you know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord." What we're doing here is not vanity. It's not emptiness. It's not pointlessness. It's not futility. Sometimes don't you do things in life and sometimes you think, oh, this is pointless. This is ridiculous. Why am I doing this? The church isn't like that. Ministry isn't like that. It may seem like it sometimes, but it isn't. It isn't. Be faithful, as we'll talk about next week, Lord willing. It's required of stewards that a man be found. Our translation would be successful, happy, vibrant. God's translation is faithful. Faithful. That's what he's called us to be, and that's what he's talking about. Be faithful. We'll look at that next week. Father, thank you this morning, for our time together. Thank you for the privilege we have of considering these things about ministry. And I pray you would help us to not glory in ourselves and glory in other people, but glory in you and what you have done. And we commit to you this time as we commemorate what Christ did, the price that he paid on the cross of Calvary for us. In Jesus' name, amen.